And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of June 1st, 2020. We're almost 6 months into the year. Pretty amazing. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, 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 good. I'm glad to see you're holding up under the continuing lockdown. I'm going with the full Civil War general haircut, right? Big beard. I'm going to start pulling my hair back in a little ponytail.
Little ponytail spray.
Anyway, Mariah, so tell me, what have you seen lately that our friends should know about?
So I've been really excited about, I was chatting with a friend this week who mentioned a 4-day work week, and then it came out that New Zealand, which has, just as the backstory, New Zealand's prime minister is Jacinda Ardern, who is just knocked it out of the park with coronavirus, the way she's handled coronavirus. She's been sort of really touted for her leadership and her empathy and her compassion and her robust ways that she's addressed coronavirus. She's had four stages that she kind of had the country go at, and New Zealand has come away with four deaths. That's it. Wow. Four deaths. I mean, not to diminish those four deaths, those matter, but compared to United States with 100,000, New Zealand's definitely doing something right when it comes to coronavirus. And not just New Zealand, but this amazing Prime Minister, Ardern. But additionally, she has been talking about something called a 4-day work week, and I'm excited about that. I think there's a lot of interesting things that can come out of that. Certainly, there's potential for helping the climate, right? There's if you have people commuting to work less often, that's going to reduce the climate. We've seen some of that impact already with this shutdown. Of course, that's not in a good way, but if we had a very planned 30-hour work week, or 32-hour work week, I guess it would be, that could be something that helps to address the climate crisis in some way. And in fact, you know, a lot of people, the pushback against a 4-day work week is that, productivity will drop. But Microsoft experimented with a 4-day work week, and productivity actually jumped by 40%,
really?
According to a Business Insider article. So, you know, I mean, I think that there's a good case for the 4-day work week in terms of maybe helping climate. There's also a good case for it in terms of sort of easing back into this coronavirus, into a situation that will keep us kind of safe from coronavirus in some sense, because you can have less people.
You're getting 20% less exposure.
Yes, and also, you know, you can stagger how many people are in the office, right? If we're all trying to go back to an office space that is the same office space it was before we went under quarantine, well, we're not going to be... It's not going to be 6 feet apart all the time. It's going to be a little bit harder to do that. And so you can kind of stagger the work week. And so she's been suggesting this. She actually also touted it as a way to boost the New Zealand economy. She said, look, if we have a 4-day work week on those other 3 days, please go and be a tourist. You know, New Zealand is known for its tourism sector, and it's been really hard hit by the virus, and so this will help kind of rebuild the economy if people can take more time to go out and explore. And you know, we talked a little bit about this in a prior podcast. We talked about Milton Friedman and his sort of idea that when you have this disarray of the system is normal, the ideas that are lying around are the ones that get picked up. And while we may not agree with a lot of what Milton Friedman says, we talked about how Naomi Klein has suggested that, yes, let's make the ideas that are lying around really good ideas. And like a 4-day work week might be one of those. And there's, of course, many other fringe ideas that are starting to kind of take hold. The universal basic income, as we mentioned, Financial Times talking about that. The Financial Times said, hey, maybe we should think about the universal basic income. We said that in a podcast a couple weeks ago.
Tell me this, how do you think that the four-day work week, one of the climate benefits would be that there's less commuting, and presumably offices are shut down Friday, Saturday, let's say Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, or Saturday, Sunday, Monday. But for most places, and that, I guess, I mean, there's lots of questions that pop up. Presumably, it turns itself into a 20% pay raise for everyone, and you keep all your insurance benefits. It seems like the place you're going to begin with, right? No one's going to take a pay cut, right? And so the idea would be keep the salary the same, just reduce the hours, and you're probably going to get essentially the same amount of work plus a climate benefit, right?
Yeah, and I think that there's a lot to unpack there. I think it's an interesting idea in theory, but there are complications to it, right? There may be the way that it could affect, there could be some issues with inequality where people, who are already scrambling with unpredictable schedules to make up for short hours and short incomes, all of a sudden they can't get the work that they need. Or maybe, you know, on the flip side of that, maybe there's people are hiring more people to fill out the space that, you know, if you have each person working only 32 hours, that frees up hours for someone else to work. So, you know, I haven't thought through ins and outs of that. And of course, like you said, does, you know, what happens to health coverage? Are people who have, you know, are they going to have a reduced percentage of their healthcare costs covered? Because so there's a lot of folds in it that make it complicated, but certainly worth putting some time into thinking about and wondering about.
The coronavirus shock has, as you say, opened everything up. And something I saw related to this was about the idea that in America, at least, sort of working has become its own reward, right? Work is a good thing in and of itself, right? Even if you're just in the rock yard making little ones out of big ones with your sledgehammer all day long, that's good for you, right? And you know, who said, you know, that's not the 11th commandment that you must work a 60-hour week. I mean, I've seen it myself. I mean, there's this sort of commitment to prove that you're more, I won't say manly, but a better employee than the next person because you're taking emails at 3 a.m. and all weekend long you're doing stuff and somehow I think the moment allows us to sort of break that hypnotic trance that somehow the person who puts in the most hours is the best employee. I mean, do you think that this gets into that kind of philosophical question of like, what's the meaning of work? I mean, why are we working in the first place? Right?
Well, it does. I mean, it also gets into the philosophical question of how do you define success, right? If, you know, you define success by, you know, hours worked or gross domestic product on a national scale, right? How, you know, so sort of redefining that might be looped into this too. What about defining success as, you know, having a robust career, but also being a good family person, spending a lot of time with your family. You're spending those 3 days with your family, or maybe perhaps, you know, if you have one parent that's working less hours, it enables another parent to work more hours while that person takes over for the kids, right? So in some ways, say you have, I mean, predominantly it has been in history, women have been home with the kids, and maybe this 4-day work week actually cracks it open a little bit more so that, you know, a woman and a man can work overlapping hours, and one day the man will be home with the kids and one day the wife will be home with the kids. And then, you know, so it's sort of opening up some of this, kind of giving some opportunity there for people, for households to both spend time with the kids and both spend time working.
I think it's a fascinating, you know, aspect of the whole thing is that the free time that is not wasted. I mean, it's your life. I mean, what I was going to say was that you see the bumper sticker about how the weekend was brought to you by the unions, right? Which is absolutely true. But how short, I mean, people used to work 6-7 days a week for 12 hours, right? And were they better human beings? I don't think so. And the idea of introducing 2 days off, that must have been a shocker, right? Shock to the system in the 1930s when you actually were guaranteed a weekend. And so now to say, well, now you're going to have 3-day weekend, the sun's going to come up the next day, right? And the GDP is, you know, even if the GDP suffers a little bit, right? There are so many other benefits in terms of quality of life that I think it's completely legitimate to discuss the possibility, right?
Yeah, there was a 2011 study that said that Longer hours worked are associated with energy-intensive consumptions and favor conspicuous expenditure and non-sustainable lifestyles, right? So, you know, you're working these long, long hours and you're either home and you're drinking or you're home, you're not exercising, so you're not living as long, your heart rate is higher, you're, I mean, all of these things can be follow-on effects from sort of the stress of those long work hours. And oftentimes, if you're working longer hours, you can be less effective, right? Sometimes, right. Oh, yeah. You know, you're exhausted and you're not taking care of yourself, so your mind's not as sharp.
No, I agree. I mean, the sort of what is it? What you make me think of is the intern, the doctors in the hospital when they're training, right? And they're working for 4 days straight, and after 48 hours or 62 hours, they're just like, they're not taking care of the patients very well because they're asleep on their feet, right?
Yeah,
but if they go through this initiation ritual of having done all this stuff, and you're back to the question of what do we value in work, right? What are we trying to prove to each other? I mean, I think that you mentioned the question, sort of skipping around because there's so many interesting ideas here, but the Uber driver who's scrambling to put food on the table, a four-day work week doesn't really benefit him very much. So the quality issues come in.
Yeah,
but then you come back to, okay, we need minimum wage or a universal basic income to put everybody on an equal footing so that we can take advantage of these literally side benefits. There's just so many ways to rethink the society, given that we've all hit the emergency brake for a couple months, right? And when you wake up and look around and say, okay, we've talked now several shows about what do we carry forward? What are we going to take out of this? And I think the idea of a four-day work week is not a bad one.
Yeah.
So tell me, what would you do? Would you do Friday, Saturday, Sunday? Would you do Monday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday? Or would you take Wednesdays off?
Well, I mean, I think that the key with this, I mean, again, especially with social distancing coming to be something we have to be thinking about, I think you have to have a lot of staggered days, right? Mm-hmm. So some people will take Wednesdays off. Some people will take Tuesdays. Some people will take Thursdays. You know, maybe it will alternate every weekend. You know, I mean, of course, I think that having 3 days in a row off is nice, right? Because you're really, you know, sort of allowing yourself to go somewhere and have an adventure.
Go ahead.
Well, along those lines, I think that's, you know, for people who do just have some people just have Wednesdays off. One of the things that one of the articles we read to prepare for the show was it talked about creating more low carbon leisure spaces, such as like opening up streets, right? Closing them down to cars and opening them up to pedestrians and bikes. So that people can, you know, enjoy a park, but then the streets around the park are also open so they can enjoy it, but spread out along that park. There can be more walking and running and biking.
And they're less tempted to jump on a flight to Miami Beach.
Right.
I mean, if you get 3 days, you don't want to go burn carbon on the 3 days off.
Yeah.
Let me just put in a plug for a podcast that I have enjoyed listening to. It's called Sustainable. It's a couple of guys over in England who have tried to look at climate issues with a sort of a humorous touch. But they were discussing bike lanes in London and how London is aggressively moving towards shutting down big thoroughfares to put in big bike lanes. And the same thing is happening in Boston. There are very impressive, like, you know, concrete barriers on Mass Avenue, I think, to protect bikers. So to the same point, I mean, you could have a low, if you're going to have a four-day work week, in tandem with that, you want easier, low-carbon commuting options, right? And like electric buses or bike lanes and whatnot to support the carbon benefits of a four-day work week.
Yeah, I remember being in Copenhagen and, you know, every intersection you went to, there was like 40 bikes there and like 5 cars, you know, I mean, not entirely, but there were so many, I mean, and everybody had a bike and everybody got around the city on their bike. And it was so lovely. I mean, it was just part of the culture.
Well, you know, it's just to segue off that. I mean, I saw something, I'll never find the link. So take my word for it. But the argument that electric vehicles are not just cars, right? And that you can have little electric scooters or little Segways or all mm-hmm. kinds of like one person, one person transportation solutions, right, that don't involve a car are much more compatible with pedestrian traffic, and it's just the imagination is all that's lacking, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Well, there you go.
A lot of potential there. We're using our imaginations the way we're supposed to, so that's good.
And dear listener, I urge you to, I mean, this is a fascinating time in the life of the world, right? Is that, so one other thing, I mean, I'm plugging podcasts this time around. I have, over the years, really enjoyed a podcast called The History of Rome by a guy named Mike Duncan. Very interesting, great way of teaching history. He has spawned many imitators who are all equally good. And there's a guy doing podcasts on the fall of the Roman Empire, various kinds of things. But these two historians got together to discuss the implications of COVID from a world historical perspective, right? What examples in history are there that relate to what we are in right now, right? It's like, okay, the Justinian plague in the year 560 was the first bubonic plague in Europe. Like, nobody knows about it, right? But it almost took down the Roman Empire. But anyway, I'll put up the link, a very interesting podcast. But what one of the people was saying was that right now with the COVID, the closest analogy is to the rebellions in Europe in 1848. Where in the course of like 6 weeks, they went from nothing to full-fledged republics in France and, you know, all these places that just, it came out of the blue. And well, I mean, it ostensibly came out of the blue, but this guy said it started with a potato famine in Ireland, and then it snuck away across. The same way, the analogy is that something like the potato famine in Ireland that then caused prices to drop. Similarly, COVID in and of itself is not the thing, but it triggers these enormous historical implications. And they're arguing that we're at this precipice. Either we're going to go to a fascistic solution to things, or it's an opportunity to build a different world. And it was just really thought-provoking. And so I guess I got off on that because I was saying that right now we're in this great time to think about these wacky ideas that are no longer wacky. They were wacky 6 weeks ago, but now they're potential solutions. So
yeah, there you go. It's exciting. I mean, it's in a weird way, it's exciting, right? It's tragic.
Yeah, well, this is true.
But let's hope we don't have a failure of imagination, and that we can use our creativity and collaboration to create something fantastic out of this.
That's our job.
Much better. We can turn this into something better. We can make some lemonade out of this, in other words.
So I'll put up links to some of that stuff on the blog. The blog will be at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you can send us your opinion of the 4-day work week, but you have to write it on either Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, or Friday. No Wednesday emails, please. You can send an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. All right. Let us know what you think about all that. You can listen to our show on the distribution app you're listening now, but on almost any other modern podcast distribution app. We want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. And we want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. So we must insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for thinking big here.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.